Conscious Curiosity SD, where successful San Diego leaders share their stories of leading beyond profit and are using the influence of business to positively change the companies and communities we all work and live in. I'm your host, Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership, a proven and powerful process for unlocking the full potential of the people and teams across your organization, giving you the competitive advantage in the marketplace. We want to thank our collaborative community of business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Business for Good, Cause San Diego, and Be Local. We're all focused on impacting our community of San Diego through the work they do as business leaders. Welcome to the show. Today, we have a subject matter expert on opinions. I believe these opinions are in areas that our audience will have a lot of interest from. How do you lead the next generation workforce? How to deal with hybrid work environments? The future of automation and technology, especially AI, and how to best use technology for your business. Sean Farrell, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, Jeff, for having me. That's a lot right there.
We're going to tap into all that, my friend. Sean is the founder and chairman of Managed Solution, which is the premier provider of outsourced IT support for mid to large size businesses in Southern California and now nationally. Sean has built an amazing company around the idea of leading managed solutions as a sports team. He's the head coach. Management team is the assistant coaches and staff are the players. And of course, customers are the fans they want to delight. Sean, I look forward to exploring the culture you have built that delivers on your promise of people empowering technology. You ready to rock and roll?
Yeah, let's do it. That's what we want to do is empower the people to do good things here.
Well, let's start out with one of those opinions, all right? So one of the things that Sean does is goes around doing public speaking, talking to groups. What's the number one thing that CEOs are asking you today? What are they looking for advice and opinions on?
If you asked me a month or maybe even 6 months ago, I wouldn't have said this. But right now, the number one thing that we're getting asked about is AI in the business. And even more so, I'm getting CEOs who come up to me and say to me, hey, Sean, why aren't you calling me as an IT company? And I'm using myself as an example. And why are you calling my IT people? Because this is the first time in history that I, the CEO, am interested in what you guys do when it comes to technology, because finally, it's something that moves the needle for my business. So I had a good friend bring that up the other day. And I said, you know, that's a really good point, because we're so used to working in the IT sector. And now finally, we have stuff that creates, I consider, business outcomes with AI and automation. So it's exciting times for, I guess, the technologists and, frankly, for the business and the CEOs who are trying to figure out where to automate the processes.
And so the answer is?
AI.
Just get in there and start doing it.
Yeah.
So how's that showing up in your business? I mean, what are you bringing to the party? How are you helping these CEOs navigate this?
That's the question of the day. And I mean, I really, truly think it's the, nowadays, it's not even $1 million question. It's the $100 million question. But, you know, every business has areas for improvement, continuous improvement, all those topics we bring up as CEOs. What do we want to do to better the business? And part of it is, you know, we hear the term AI, artificial intelligence. The flip of that is just we want to automate things in our business to make better decisions. You know, we started in the landscape of business intelligence a bunch of years ago. Like, what is the data that we have telling us? And right now we've gotten to the point where we're trying to.
We had lots of data. We didn't know what to do with it, right?
We did. And yeah. I mean, if you think 20 years ago, the data was sitting in, you know, our own, we'll call it rooms in the back, the data centers. It was sitting in disparate places. And, you know, call 20 years, you know, 20 years later, 2024, all that data sort of centralized now, which we call the cloud. But, you know, I don't want to get into the tech stuff, more AI here. Finally, the data is accessible for these learning language models to go out and understand, you know, what it is we've done over the last, you know, several 20, 30 years, and ultimately how to help us make better decisions more rationally. And CEOs are asking, really, how do we get it into our business? When they go, and I mean this in the best of ways, when they go to their IT leadership, a lot of the time, they're asking them, implement AI for me. The reality is that the CEO and the executives and, you know, CFOs, COOs, those kind of people, they're the ones who really know the gaps in the business, the places for, you know, where we can automate and create opportunities, where we can, you know, embed AI into the business. So we want to talk to them. And so what we've done to answer your question is we have a lot of questions that we go through with CEOs that really help them drive down to different solutions that are going to impact their business. Same thing with line of business managers, sales, operations, HR. We talk to them and kind of understand their day-to-day workings and then ultimately come up with ways to, again, automate and or AI the business for them.
So it's not like showing up like, oh, here, I got this product for you. You want to buy this from me kind of thing. It's more of like, let's sit down and figure out what do you need and then how do we customize the solution to that?
Yeah, big time. And I mean, there are products. There's stuff that we're all buying that, you know, out of the box we have, there's AI built in. I mean, I think every product, software, we'll say there's AI built into our solution these days. But when you're a business owner and you have your own specific way of doing things procedurally or process-wise, you know, we have to come in and help understand where we can put AI into that process to ultimately, you know, as I always say, automate whatever it is they're doing. So it does take some Q&A back and forth. And I'd say 90% of the time we walk out of a business talking to the CEO or senior leadership team, we have a solution, so to speak, and something that we're going to bring back and ultimately implement for them. And it's different. Like I say, it used to be the IT leadership we were talking to. I think now we're kind of talking to both about, you know, where those gaps are and what outcomes they create. And then ultimately for the CEO, which all of us want, you know, what's the ROI in doing this?
Right. At the end of the day, is this going to make me some money or?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've been finding it like really interesting. So a great example, someone turned me on to this tool called Body Design the other day, right? Where you go and you do this thing and it comes out this little report. So I find myself going crazy on the internet, looking up these things, watching all these YouTubes, and all of a sudden I go, why am I doing it this way? Let me just ask AI, right? So I put the question and say, all right, if I'm one of these, how do I use this versus me doing the research? Now I gave this great answer. So it's amazing what you can do with this thing.
Yeah, and it's like a sport, right? Like you did the other day. Once you practice it, you actually start asking the questions and you kind of naturally start to move towards that. You know, I have another question about something else. And then suddenly right. You start to realize where these tools can actually become, I guess, part of your life, you know, your sidekick, if you will, or your wingman, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, we're seeing a lot of that. And people ask me all the time, where is it good? Where is it bad? I was using an example the other day because somebody called me about, you know, their insurance provider. We were talking about cybersecurity and cyber liability and all that and compliance. And I said, well, the challenge you're going to have in the future, all of us are going to have, is we're trying to help, you know, make sure all these things that you're reading about on the internet, security breaches, all that stuff doesn't happen. But it's gotten so bad on the front of, you know, these people in there trying to fish and trying to get into your businesses or, you know, some of the bigger businesses that we as humans can only protect so much in our business as their cybersecurity experts. So AIs came in and, you know, really looks at what's happening faster than we can as a human. Mm. And ultimately rationally gotten to the, well, here's the problem, here's how it's coming in, and here's how we fix it. So it can be a big help to humans in so many ways. And I tell people it's, I mean, again, I'm sure everybody's heard this, but it's the repetitive stuff we have to think about if we're in a job where it's repetitive. You know, we've got to really start thinking about where AI might replace that. But for the most part, I just think about it more from a human perspective. AI is rationalizing decisions faster than we could because our brains are trained to emotionally react to things. And I used an example. I was asking this one guy, he was an AI expert. Gosh, will it pick our future spouses in the future? And he said, you know, I think it might help us rationally
give
you decide.
The criteria.
Yeah, like you love, she likes fishing like you like fishing.
They'll put my body design in there, so you need one of these.
Yeah, and but emotionally, our emotions, which will always kick in, will help us make that ultimate decision. So it's going to be a helper is what I right. expect.
I keep hearing that. It's like kind of, like you said, kind of the wingman.
Yeah. Yeah,
so the goal is bring the wingman in now. Don't be waiting. Start using this thing in places that you might want to use it, your marketing or trying to figure stuff out like I was just describing. It's like, jump in the game. That's too scary.
So many ways. And it's hard. I mean, again, I give credit to CEOs for running businesses because, you know, I run one and we're always, there's a lot of gaps in all of our businesses. None of us are perfect. And we're trying to first identify those because that's what we spend our days doing. And then two, figure out how to, not to say plug holes, but create long-term strategy and solutions for that. And one of those things is human. The other side of that is, you know, if I automated X, Y, or Z process, would that really help the business? And so extracting that from the CEO, back to, you know, the original question is what we've been able to do well. And then, of course, the engineering's not to say easy, but it's easy once we understand what it is they're trying to achieve. And so getting that out of the CEO or leadership is the
identifying
first step.
Identifying the problem is the solution. It's not the hard part.
Yes.
What do you really want?
Yes, exactly right.
Excellent. Well, you touched on something else that I find to be super scary, and that's this whole cybersecurity thing. As an individual, I can't imagine I'm not hacked, right? I just can't imagine it. Our government gets hacked at the highest level. So why would I think that someone doesn't have all my stuff? And the only reason they haven't attacked me is like, I'm not worth it yet.
Well, but you are actually. But yeah, I can answer that question. I mean, it's funny because to get to the big guys, these cyber, we'll call it attackers, you know, people out there in the world who are doing these things. And it's so sad. I mean, it's really
the bad actors.
Yeah, the bad actors. I mean, we're all very aware of what's going on. They're looking for the small business first. They're looking for the people who are the most vulnerable so that those people who work with, let's say those big people, the governments, the, you know, the big Fortune 500, 100 companies, they have access into those systems and that's one way in. So you read a lot about that and, you know, people at this point, in my humble opinion, it's hard to take security in the business, you know, the technology to manage security serious until a lot of the time, you know, we always say stuff hits the fan, if you will.
Right. After the fact.
But it's important. And what we are seeing, and I'll give you a couple of fun ways to look at it that's in some ways helping. the news, the media, they are showing and talking about these big companies getting in trouble. You know, a month ago, we had the airline stuff, and it's helping promote the security landscape. Cyber insurance providers, you know, it was funny. We had this long conversation about why cyber insurance is getting so expensive. It's mandatory to have. It's hard to get, you know, if you don't meet some of their requirements, meaning they're coming into your company and looking at whether or not you have certain security tools. They're pushing, again, the security landscape inside of businesses, which is good, I think, to help, you know, the business themselves adopt this stuff. And I was saying like 10 years ago when we were all working in the office, or insurance companies were worried about workplace accidents, things like that. Now we're working remote, and yet insurance companies have figured out new ways to, you know, go about insuring us and making sure our businesses are safe, because they're now so data-driven that that's, you know, really where you're paying for insurance. But the third thing I thought was interesting about cybersecurity is everybody who we talk to, and I'm, you know, there's a million technology experts out there. Everybody says, well, I'm not on-premise anymore. I don't have any data. It lives in the cloud, or, you know, Amazon or Microsoft or Google, or
they got me. Don't worry.
They've got my, yeah. And what's funny about it is that when you go to your house or you go to any place you go, I mean, it could be anywhere in an airport, and you go to your Wi-Fi or you go to your Bluetooth settings and you click it, you're going to see like 80 different things that you have access to. So at my house, when I go home and I've got two boys and I've got my wife and a million different devices, we actually are more on premise these days with what they call the Internet of Things. It could be rings that we wear, watches, that could be, you know, the million different speakers outside that are all devices that are essentially things that we're connected to that can be breached. So we've got to be even more careful than ever. So the whole landscape is complex right now, and it's being pushed, you know, heavily by the government, asking us to get into it and make sure we protect our businesses, cyber insurance providers. I think cyber security teams and people are trying to do a good job of explaining to executives why this is important, but it's going to take some time, and we're going to continue to see these problems exist.
We're going to win this battle?
I think
it's kind of like there's always crime, right? So can we stay ahead of the criminals out there?
I think it's going to get to the point, if we talked about AI a second ago, I think we're going to get a mix of AI coming at us, attacking our businesses, you know, with the human involved, and then vice versa, the human with AI trying to protect
the
businesses.
AI,
and so
right.
It'll be kind of
sounds like a TV show.
Yeah, the digital profile that we all are these days, you know, we're, you know, human with a lot of our lives on the internet. I mean, it's going to be a battle with those two things, and it's ongoing. I don't know. I mean, I always think about, can you imagine the world without internet for a period of time, you know, because it was shut down or somebody had control of that? I mean, you know, global economies would shut down. It gets to be pretty scary when you think about it, big picture.
How does a guy like you and your business keep pace with all this stuff? I mean, it's just happening so fast. I mean, how do you do that, Sean?
You know, I'm kind of a big believer in, you know, tech can serve the humans, period. I mean, I think that's what I've believed
in.
That's
the tagline right here.
Is it? Okay, yeah.
People empowering technology.
It really is. You know, it's the people, the process, and the technology should be third in line in those conversations. I think we've always been, here's the technology tool I want, and yet we forget about the people who empower it. It should be the flip. So for me, it's watching, you know, I always say it's kind of at the tippity top, watching the best of the best in people developing technology in the world. You know, I think about the, I mean, I don't want to go into specific names, but the big companies like the Amazons, the Googles, the Microsofts, the Salesforces, you know, the Oracles. Those companies, you know, they're out there to hopefully build stuff that's great to protect us as humans. So I have to align and partner with them. I have to watch the landscape of, you know, economic climates, global climates, and ultimately understand, I mean, at the core, how technology impacts a lot of these things that we do. So I pay attention to that, and then that helps me drive, you know, what I'll call solutions that we as a company can put in place. And then I look at it from just the landscape of, in our different industries and verticals that we deal with across the world, you know, as a, I guess, consulting firm, you know, what are they looking for? And, you know, specific to those industries, how do we build products or processes or services that ultimately help those businesses along? So you kind of take all those three, smush them together, and that's kind of how I see the world.
Don't sleep too much.
And I look at people. I mean, that's at the core of it. You know, we talk about remote workforces. We talk about the social human now. You know, we're so caught up in the internet and all our data is there. So I do have to look at the way that I believe humans are evolving from my kids and, you know, their kids and, you know, the people who are past me in age, and just understand how everybody's doing things in a different way, how that social environment is today and potentially what it might look like, you know, 10, 20 years from now.
Just running fast, eh?
Yeah, very much so.
Let's talk about managed solutions a little bit. You've taking a business that you started, and how many years you've been at this? 20 plus, right?
20, 21, maybe, yeah.
All right, 21 plus. You've now got a national reach, so you've really been successful with the business. Maybe talk about that story a little bit. How's that all evolved? How did you get to where you are today?
Yeah.
What was the big lesson learned in that journey, Sean?
The lesson learned for me has been, we're in the services business. There's the product businesses out there. It's like when Tom Brady or one of these quarterbacks in NFL or a baseball team wins the World Series or the Super Bowl. Or the Grammy speeches, people say, I give it all the credit all to the producers and the actors. And it's so true. Like, I give it all the credit, truly give all the credit. And I feel so cliche to the people who have made this, what it is today. But national, a lot of people compared to what it was 20 years ago, lots and lots of people all over the U.S. in different states. It's been a fun thing. I think COVID did manage solution of service by letting me look outside of California, letting me look across the U.S. and really hire the best of the best talent everywhere. And it also allowed Managed Solution to, scale because, we used to sit across the table, I hate to say, from everybody and, sell to them and explain to them what we could do. And, COVID changed all that. Now
we
sit.
The whole model, right? The whole mindset about.
Yeah. We're in a Zoom
video. Do I need
video.
To be in the room or not? Yeah, exactly.
And so what happened? I remember sales teams freaking out, and this is across the board, not just Managed Solution. Like, well, I can't meet those people in person anymore. We're not going to have lunches. And I said, well, the good news is they're going to buy from whoever is the best out there. So unfortunately, on that screen, they're going to buy from who they know is really good at what they do. So for us, who, I think we're pretty good, we've won a lot of business across the U.S. over the last bunch of years, which allowed us to scale nationally. Now, prior to that, it was, like I say, when I first started the company, what I knew I wanted to do was build a reoccurring revenue business, something that was, good for everybody, truly, the client as well. I wanted to say to a client, hey, I'm going to charge you a fixed fee on a monthly basis, and I just want everything to work as best I can, with the money you've invested in technology and vice versa. You want the same thing because you don't want to call me. And that made sense for everybody.
Kind of back to that earlier CEO relationship, right?
Yeah.
Just make sure this stuff works, Sean. I don't really want to see you here at all, to be honest with you.
I told somebody the other day, I said, I hate to use us as like the comparison to an insurance policy. You don't want to have to use it. And sometimes we have to make sure we're telling people, hey, we're doing all these things behind the scenes. So
we are working.
You don't have to, we are working. And, when they look at it like that, they're like, great. I mean, I'm willing to pay for that and have that insurance policy. And that's what we were and we've become, and it's worked out really well. And then, we do a lot of, we own a national help desk. We have people who literally support customers 24 hours a day, very technical, all that data we talked about earlier. And the flip of that is we have this ability to walk into businesses and talk to any level of, CFO, CEO, IT leadership, and ultimately help them achieve what I call business goals through the lens of technology. And we really probe to try to figure out what's going to move the needle for their business.
So you're truly walking in to be a business partner.
Absolutely.
I'm not just here to sell you something or be a service. It's like, how do we have a conversation about how do we really affect your bottom line?
Yep. If it doesn't impact the business, I don't, honestly, it's not fun for any of us. For me, as the owner of Managed Solution, we're always excited when we hear about something we've helped a company achieve. And we have a process to do it. It's kind of our, we call it the IT mission and the IT vision we help companies create. And we have core principles that we walk them through organizational development, in employee experience, return on investment, total cost of ownership, all these things we go through to make sure that it's not a tech conversation, it's a business conversation. Yeah. Super fun. And that's kind of where we've gotten to. And you asked me earlier, the next step in the tech world is this whole automate AI, exciting thing. So, and finally, like I say, we have, I think, everybody's attention, CEOs down, and it's going to be fun for the next bunch of years.
So has it been a challenge to get your team thinking business versus technology and problem solving? I mean, often people just like, I want to do the tech, I don't care how it all works out in the business. Was that a challenge to go, this is how we approach the problem? We're business partners in this thing?
Yes. It wouldn't be truthful. I didn't say that engineers have had to transition. So let me give it to you two sides of it is my engineers, we've spent a lot of time realizing that all these new technologies, AI and down, it takes kind of a practitioner, somebody who understands how to achieve the business outcome and apply technology to really put this all together. So we've got our teams, that we'll call them the information officers, the technical account managers, the advisors. We are truly advisors to that point where they can do that. Where we are seeing the gap, and we're trying to make sure that's changing, as I talked about, is, IT leadership, we're wanting to see that maturity level continue to rise. So they see things from how cybersecurity should work all the way to, where we can embed AI into businesses, and that's happening. So I think a lot of IT people who were traditionally into what I call the tools, they were network or systems engineers, are now more focused on being business consultants, business advisors. And I think that's important. So yeah,
that's a big shift, I think.
It's got to be.
I've run a lot of technical teams. Budgets, who cares, right?
Yeah.
Leave me alone. I'm inventing something over here.
And I want IT, and I love IT people. I'm one of them. I want those people to be able to walk into a room with an executive group and say, here's what it's going to achieve. Here's what I need to do it financially. And it's an easy conversation. But I think traditionally IT people have walked into a room, asked for, you know, we'll call it dollars and cents as part of a budget. And a lot of the time they can be turned down, and that can be very deflating for an IT person. You know, cybersecurity, they know the importance of it. They just have to, we have to bridge that gap. And I'm teaching a lot of, you know, CIOs how to do that. Like, how do I have that strategic conversation with my executive leadership team so they adopt the things that I know down
deep. So you're coaching the internal guy to be able to communicate with his.
Yeah. And we love it. And it's because we want to see everybody succeed.
Love that.
Yeah.
So how do you hire?
Oof. Well,
it's one of those opinion questions.
Yeah. You know, first step is soft skills. We're looking for people that, you know, I've always been a big believer, a Navy Admiral friend of mine, you know, curious and humble, like, is what I look for in people. So people who are very curious, very humble, and want to learn. And the number one thing, I do these things once a month with all these new employees because I can't see them in person anymore, Jeff, called Slice to Meet You. It was supposed to be nice to meet you. Slice to meet you. We sent them pizzas from Chicago at 4 p.m. They all bake their thick, deep dish pizzas.
I love it.
And we all get together on the phone. And the number one thing I hear is everybody here is so open to giving what they know about technology. So it's easy to come up to speed here and really understand what's going on. And that's not normal in the technology sector. You get a lot of ego and things like that. So
did you do something to facilitate that?
Yeah. I mean, so a couple of things, you know, we kind of got away from the culture word a little bit at Managed Solution and got more into like community is our word. You know, how do we create community, both internal and external with our clients? You know, we went through all those exercises, emotional intelligence, training and development, EOS modeling. I mean, a lot of the things that I had studied and read about in books and just really embody the idea of understanding the capacity of the human. Like, what can they do? What do they do really well? How self-aware are they?
Sean, you don't sound like an IT guy. Eh?
Remember, people first, then process, then tech. Remember, the people do this stuff, and they should. Yeah, I mean, that's how it started. So when we go into these interviews, we're looking for, like I say, the soft skills first, technical skills, not to say second, and ultimately the blend of the two. And it's a process. We are doing recruiting all over the U.S. and full-time recruiters just to keep up with, you know, what we need.
So you guys have seen some dramatic growth. And we say COVID was like one of the biggest drivers in...
Yeah, I mean, we grew, almost 60% last year, and the year before about the same.
Because of the opportunity of what it opened up for you.
The opportunity. I mean, you know, remote workforces just changed the IT landscape a lot. I mean, I used to be able to walk down the hall in my own office when people would fix computers. And frankly, when we work on a computer these days, we're not even working on the computer. We're logging into something that's somewhere up there in the sky, the cloud. And now what these companies are doing is these IT guys that used to be, quote unquote, desk side support. Not to say they're not needed, because they are. Certain companies, R&D, manufacturing, all those people are at work, but a lot of them are not. And so those help desks have become very popular, remote support, which it's hard to develop those things, those processes, those people. And so we've done that. So that was a big growth for us. And then the other one has
been— Are you all U.S.-based, or have you done anything offshore? Or?
Because of that security concern, we are 100% U.S.-based. People ask us all the time, and my answer is— If it's a cost model thing where, you know, we need to be less expensive outside of the U.S., I can't necessarily do it. And we're not overly costly. We're just what it costs because we're in the U.S. But it's a security thing and we stay here. And everybody's a W-2 employee here in the U.S. today. So anyway, that's
so
the short
part of
answer.
The family.
It is.
It's not a bunch of contractors coming and going.
I do. And one other answer to your original question around our community is I have kids. I'm married. I love them more than anything. They are they are what makes me who I am ultimately. But one thing I can say about having kids is that your kids know you love them no matter what. All the dad's mean, dad's telling me these kind of things, they feel safe at home. They know mom and dad are going to protect them if there's a problem. So I wrote a letter to Managed Solution back in 2022 during COVID or 2021 all about like safety. It wasn't about trust. It was about we are going to screw up all the time like our kids do, like our siblings do, like our spouses do. But we still feel safe in each other's company, and that is what has created Managed Solution, this feeling of safety. So that's another big piece of the organization.
Are most of your folks just 100% remote, or you got a hybrid thing going on?
No, we have a big corporate office here in San Diego, which is our headquarters, but probably have 40, 50 employees in San Diego. The other, 75, 80 are throughout the U.S. and some big metropolitan areas.
Yeah. Kind of in hubs where they
Colorado, Texas, Florida, the East Coast, up, north there, yeah. all over the place.
Is that a hybrid model then? People are doing a combination of coming in, or what does that look like for you?
Back to, you asked me how I think about all these things. Even before COVID, we were what's called a ROW, results-oriented work environment, workforce. I had studied Google and a lot of other companies and how they were managing this, you know, coming this certain amount of days in the office and, you know, managing KPIs and OKRs. So we've been like this for a long time. So even in San Diego, you know, if we come in a couple of days a week and we get together more for that social component, that's why we do it. But no, there's no real mandate to be in an office anywhere at any time. So that's kind of been us for the last few years.
Yeah. You already were there. That just kind of accelerated things for you, COVID.
Yeah. Every business owner was nervous. I mean, I used to walk around the office and get nothing done because I just wanted to see how people were doing.
Yeah, hanging out.
I mean, I'd go home, my wife would say, God, sweetie, you have to work. And I'd say, yeah, because I just hadn't seen this person or that person. So we spent a lot of time just chitter-chatting, which is a problem in today's society. Going on to these
Zoom. Now we're missing that part.
We get into a Zoom call or a Teams call or whatever call we're on, or just a phone call, and we go right to business.
Right.
We forget about, you know, how your dog's doing or what your surf lesson looked like or how your kid's baseball game went that you had talked about. We have to make sure that happens. Humans are looking for experiences. And because they're so tied up at home or remotely or so distant from everybody, and that social situation's changing. And we saw it in our kids. We're seeing it now in our adults. And I think that's why, you know, a lot of things are changing too. We were talking the other day about, you know, nice restaurants with experiences or places to go to watch a concert. I think those things are very important to society because we are so, not to say cooped up, we are spending so much time at home that we want to go out and have an experience, which part of that is just being in a social atmosphere. You know, with what we've seen happen with COVID, it's also created a lot of opportunity for new things to come.
I know my local bagel place in PB probably thinks I'm an employee there because, you know, I got the home office and I don't know, I just like to get out of there, go somewhere. You got some noise around you, right? So I got my little spot I like to go to. I get my coffee, I get my bagel. I'm there for 3 hours until my battery goes dead, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm a regular.
The local hangout. Yeah, we need it. We need
it. Yeah, we want that connection. You and I met, what, 2-3 years ago? You were on a panel that I was doing for the Cause Conference. And I remember us chit-chatting. I was at your office and we're talking and you were talking a little about San Diego and you were expressing some concerns at that time in regards to cost of properties and where's the labor force going to come from in the future here, given the situations. What's going on in that space today in your mind? How are we doing? Because things obviously we got a lot more expensive since that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, that's not, San Diego is a unique place in its own. So we all know that. I think we agree with that. Maybe to keep the conversation interesting. So we went out and we pumped, you know, the government, we put a lot, I'm not a politician or am I political whatsoever, but we pumped a lot of money into the world, what, like 4 or 5 years ago at the start of COVID, I think $5 trillion, the most ever, which PPP and all those loans, and that money got in put into the businesses and ultimately, in theory, that got distributed to people, the employees, you know, wages got higher, people, you know, as we were trying to bring people back to work, you know, via the COVID stuff, we were, not to say paying them more, we were paying them what they were worth in the markets. And of course, San Diego is one of those more expensive markets as we saw that inflation start to creep up and the price of, you know, homes creep up. That meant the employee and just expenses in general, that meant the employees needed more to be able to survive and live in, you know, this beautiful place. So I think, you know, the challenge we all face is that as a business in San Diego, you know, Managed Solution as an example, I want to be able to hire the best people I can here locally. I really do. But that also means that if those people cost me something, you know, 10, 20, 30% more, then if I'm going to try to be a San Diego-based business, I'm going to potentially have to charge my customer 10, 20, 30% more. Is that fair? No. So oftentimes what I'll do is, you know, what we have done is we've gone outside of the state, ultimately not only hired people, you know, relative to what the income should be in that state, but ultimately, you know, we went out for clients outside of San Diego that makes sense for Managed Solution, you know, just based upon, you know, our cost of doing business and ultimately what the client's willing to pay. So it's tough in San Diego on top of everything else. You know, a lot of our trades got expensive. I think that's across the board, you know, whether it be, you know, how do we frame up a house or right. You know, have somebody come over as a plumber, all that stuff. It just happened and it didn't happen. It happened because, again, a lot of money being pumped in. A lot of people got out of debt. Their assets went up in value, homes, properties, things like that. They were willing to spend more. There was no shortage of consumer spending. I always use I love burritos, I live in San Diego. But when my burrito went from $9.95 to $15.95, the simple math there says over time, we're going to spend our money faster. And so we're starting to see that, unfortunately. And we're starting to see, You know, when you see layoffs at the Amazons or, you know, the big companies, and it's not because those companies aren't doing really well. It's because I'm going to deliver one less package to Jeff's house or Sean's house today. Amazon knows that consumer spending is going to slow because we've burned through a lot of that cash. And so we're going to see a reset. I think in San Diego in particular, we're going to see some, there's great talent coming up through the school systems. I speak to them all the time. I was at Point Loma Nazarene, who has some amazing engineering talent. So we're going to get students out of there. I think a lot of the companies here that are continuously growing are, you know, doing really well. Some are, you know, obviously having some of the high-risk companies like biotech and pharma are seeing some layoffs. So we're seeing talent there. But I think it's going to settle up a little bit here in the next year, and it's going to allow us to really, you know, focus a lot of our hiring and our talent back in San Diego, which is exciting because back to your remote workplace question, even though we're remote, I want to be able to see people, if I can, here in my own backyard.
Right.
So it's
you can't do that for scattered across the world, right?
You can't. You try to do your best, but you can.
Yeah. When we started, when you showed up today, we're kind of talking about the world or whatever, and maybe ties into this conversation as well. It's just, what are you seeing? I mean, you're out there in a national footprint working with lots of different companies. What's going on out there?
Man, I keep thinking about all these, like, I try to stay, you know, non-political, any of those things. But just in general, I am worried about, you know, social society and, you know, what happens with it. And, you know, on one side, I think COVID, whatever it was that created this remote workforce, I think it was a blessing and a curse. Like the blessing being we got more time with the people that we love, our families, our kids, our friends. I think we were pushed so hard prior to COVID to be such a social society, you know, be at every event, be at every, you know, meeting, everything was in person. And for some people, that's exhausting. So I think this has replenished, you know, the human spirit a lot in a lot of ways. You know, there are a lot of things we talked about AI at the beginning, you know, a lot of things that people are trying to figure out, whether, you know, one of the things that we talk about is we're moving towards, you know, our healthcare is changing into, you know, predictive healthcare. We're actually starting to see things where people can kind of talk about what's going to happen to them because you can find that out today. We're seeing, you know, the shift to, we talked about humans, we're at home more, but it's not only that we're at home more things are being brought to us. So, you know, we don't have to go out and get food anymore. It can be brought to us or Amazon or whoever.
You can be a hermit now.
You can be a hermit now. So we're trying to figure out, you know, I think experiences, restaurants are changing and how they serve, you know, because now it's more about an experience than it is coming in to sit at a restaurant because people want to get out. So we're seeing a lot of things flip. I worry about real estate as a whole. You know, we were talking about San Diego a couple of weeks ago. You know, Managed Solutions, a big company in San Diego, we would started looking at commercial real estate, and there's a lot of it because everybody's working remote.
Especially downtown.
And so downtown, I was thinking about it. I go, God, how do we, if businesses don't necessarily want to be in the downtown area, which then drew the employee to want to live in the downtown area and walk to work, and we can't convert those buildings that are solid glass on the side, you know, what do we do with that real estate? What do we do when I can get a ride somewhere quicker via an Uber? Because I only drive, I think the statistics you drive or your car, what is it, like 1 hour on average per day, if that, or maybe even less. So do I even need a car in the future when the financials flip to where it makes more sense to just get a ride share? And then when the cars are autonomous, what happens? So I think about all these things as it pertains to, like, you know, real estate. Do I need parking garages? Do I need my own garage at my home? What do I convert that into? And so what happens with the basic things that are commodities that we use going forward? So my mind is definitely spinning right now. My job is to figure out how tech can really help that. But ultimately, yeah, it's a lot that I think our children have to think about and look forward to. And hopefully we're resilient. This has been going on for millions of years. We'll figure it out. But exciting and yet stuff that for a lot of people is probably terrifying stuff at the same time.
Right.
Yeah.
I look at all the cars. I live in PV, right? And the streets are lined with cars. And I just think of like how much money is sitting there and depreciating assets. And how much are you really using it?
And you think.
And if you get a good alternative, the Uber type, I mean, why not?
Yeah. And then, you know, there's now you got. Leave your car on the side of the road with the keys in it and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Bicycles.
The Toros and all those.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, even the freeways, you know, you think, oh, people aren't driving. People are working from home, yet they're more crowded than ever. And I always think, well, that's got to be because all the amount of goods that Jeff and Sean want brought to their houses from the Amazons and the UPSs, those trucks are a lot bigger than a car was. And they're all over the freeways trying to move, you know, products, you know, to us as fast as they can. So a lot that's a lot to think about.
Little story here. A couple of weeks ago or a month ago or something, I get rear-ended. I get that fixed. And like a week after that, I'm making a turn. And I know there's a curb there. And so I'm trying to miss the curb, but I've managed to catch the curb. And all I hear this big bang, right? Completely tore the rocker panel off my car. All right. Okay. Now I have a project. So I go on eBay. I find the replacement part. I go on Amazon. I get all the clips. But I have to paint this thing, right? Because it's red. My car's gray. So I order the paint at the same time. I'm still waiting on that paint to show up. This is like 2-3 weeks ago now. Oh. And I'm like going, what's up? You know, like you're so used to like, man, I order it and it shows up in 24 hours or less. In fact, I'm sitting here like for 2 weeks waiting for this paint to show. I have to admit, I paid, you know, the cheap freight thing. But yeah. I'm like going, what's going on in the world here?
Instant gratification.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you just get so used to things just, you know, here in a moment. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's another thing too is I think about, you know, we don't think before we buy anymore because we're going to get it not only quick, but, you know, my wife, I love her to death, but we order off Amazon and we get a lot of things. But consciously, it's not the right thing. We know we can return it and there's no issue. And a lot of that stuff goes to waste and, you know, they don't know how to, you know, restock it.
All the cardboard.
Yeah. But, you know, even that's a fun topic too. I think about it. I've always thought, what can I do with the cardboard? And I think they've came up with ways where put it in a central location, they'll shred it and Amazon will reuse it, things like that. There's something there to be had with the cardboard thing. But then again,
I always love when you get this box this big, just got a screw in it or something.
Right, yeah. It's like, wrap.
I mean, really, come on. Yeah. We could have done something here, I think.
But I think, you know, when you thought about storefronts, you know, the old days, age myself, but, you know, the Targets and all these places, we do go to buy goods. Again, I think we're going there because we love this, you know, back to atmosphere. We're also seeing stores change where if you talk to any human, they're going to say, oh, I love going there because of the atmosphere. But anyway, you have to package goods in a certain way where they, you know, show, make this up, the product you're getting and it has, you know, the plastic on the front and the description on the back. A lot of companies who are doing online ordering are just sending it to you in a cardboard box, describing it online and getting rid of a lot of that packaging cost. So just so many things are changing so fast where, again, things get brought to you. You don't have to go get it. I mean, home food delivery. I mean, it's pretty incredible. So I even, you know, years ago, I started another company called MyFoodFridge.com, and it was the concept. This was 15 years ago.
A little early.
But the concept was simple. It was like, you know, you pull the milk out of the fridge. The milk is done. It's got a barcode on it. You scan it, and then ultimately it knows that you need milk. And then your Vons Club card, if you go to Vons or Ralph's or wherever you shop in other states, it's different. And ultimately it would have the cart ready for you, and it would optimize, you know, knowing that milk was on sale today from $2.99 to $1.50, we would say, hey, now is the time to order, and would automatically order at the best price for you. And, you know, the whole thing was a good idea. Now that is all actually happening. They're keeping track of what you buy. The only thing we have to do if we want is kind of watch our inventory at home if we use it or not. But all these things are technology driven, but they are happening.
And we're just creatures of habit. It's not that hard to figure us out. I have another question for you in regards to, you just mentioned going into schools, you're talking to the schools. CEOs running businesses, what's the role in the community back? Like, what kinds of ways, or how do we talk to CEOs in a way that says, hey, maybe you have a bigger role to play here than just, you know, bottom line profits and all that? How do you participate in the community and kind of solving some of our social issues in that? How should we be approaching CEOs with that?
Well, I mean, I think the short answer is, you know, there's a lot of CEO organizations around San Diego, all over the U.S. And so I think, and, you know, we're all, what's the word? Consciously, we want to do right by others and by the communities. And, you know, most CEOs, as far as I've met them here in San Diego, are very humble people. And so the question is, how do we get them together? They're so busy, whether they're working from home these days or not. We were talking about this the other day, getting a CEO back in the day, they'd be in the office and at 5 o'clock they could go to an event, kind of get them together. And nowadays it's like, I'm working from home all day for me to get all dressed up and go to an event. It's a little bit more of an effort.
I got to shave. What?
Yeah. So, yeah. And so anyway, but
put
I think,
pants on.
Yeah, we that too, got to do it. But I do think that we are, you know, trying to figure out how to be more conscious about what's going on in San Diego, try to identify problems. I just know that the groups that I sit in, you know, the YPOs, the Vestiges of Old, you know, are, you know, we would get together as groups and try to figure out where we could help organizations in the county of San Diego. So that hasn't stopped. I don't think we do a good enough job publicizing all the things we're trying to do to help communities, but it's definitely happening. But I think, you know, conferences, you know, for executives or CEOs are really good to have. I think we need to just figure out better ways to get people together with a cause, and that's going to help. And again, I think when we say as a CEO, it's an excuse to say we don't have time to do something that ultimately all the money we might make is probably what we're going to want to do with it anyway, is help other people, whether it's people we know or just, you know, businesses out there or just people in need. So we've got to figure that out. But right. I think it's hard to, you know,
how do you rally the troops together and run something compelling that they're willing to show up for and make it happen?
Yeah.
Well, we got to put a bit of a bow on this thing. I always like to end it with, what's the big idea? What's like the one thing you want people to remember out of this conversation, Sean?
Well, the big idea, if it was just here in San Diego, I mean, I'm always happy and I have lots of people who I work with. I never say they work for me, who could come into a business and help them automate whatever it is they want to automate. AI is a big topic. I want to protect the businesses against what AI can do too, meaning, you know, we got to make sure our data is safe and not shared in a way where AI can go and, you know, use it to our disadvantage. But definitely would be, if you're looking to talk about technology from a what type of outcome it creates for your business, you know, CEOs, you know, IT executives, leadership, that's where I want to help. And I'm willing to show up, put on any sort of event, anything like that, that ultimately, if it helps the business, we're all for it. That's my message.
Awesome. Well, you obviously have done a great job. You're building an amazing business. Things continue to grow. You're impacting the whole country now. And clearly behind that is your philosophy, both as like, let's think about this as a business win-win scenario and people, right?
Yeah.
There's people involved in all this good stuff. So if we're taking care of the people, good things will happen.
Yeah, it does. I mean, so, it does.
John, we appreciate you.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
Well, that's our show for today. And if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, comment, and most importantly, share the podcast with a friend. Again, special thanks to our collaborative community of San Diego business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Be Local, Business for Good, and Cause San Diego. We're all using the influence of business to positively impact our very own community of San Diego. I'm Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership saying, until next time, go do what you do. Go do what you do best, for we're all counting on you.